You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Thank you for joining Right Side Radio today once again. This is Yaffe filling in for Phil Williams. I believe Phil is celebrating his anniversary. 35 years, what he told me. That's amazing. So congratulations to them. And he asked me to fill in, and apparently I'm just here all the time anyways lately. So why not? Just pull up a microphone. There you go. I'm talking. You know, Copper, this has kind of turned into my nap time if I ever get a nap. Usually it's around this time. I'll listen to some of Phil, but sometimes I'm getting a nap at this time.
That makes sense.
I knew you would understand.
Indeed.
If anyone would understand the beauty of a nap, it would be Copper.
I wish I could nap better. Do you nap well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good. I nap too well. That's the problem. Because if I can nap, if Steffi doesn't wake me up, which I'll tell her to wake me up in a couple hours, because she doesn't understand it. She does not get the nap. She's like, no, day. Bright, sunny, do things. And I'm like, nap.
Morning people.
But no, sometimes, yeah, if I'm tired enough, I can sleep, as you know. I appreciate everyone listening today. We have a lot to get to on the show. Coming at the bottom of this hour, I'll speak with Joseph Curl. He is a columnist with the Daily Wire. Also, editor-in-chief at offthepress.com. Lots of different things to talk about with him, including the top news story on his site right now. Is the fact that this trans swimmer in Pennsylvania keeps winning, crushing the competition because it's a boy who now says he's a girl and beat, I think the closest time, he beat him like 23 seconds, beat the next person, next in line, the next girl in swimming. And this really does bother me because, as you know, Steffi, my wife, was a swimmer in college. And with this kind of madness, she wouldn't have been able to do that. You know, she wouldn't be able to compete if all the guys were just competing. It's just kind of natural biology. So we'll talk with Joseph about that. Casey Wardinsky is going to join me in the 4 o'clock hour or the 3 o'clock hour today. And I have to talk with him about the NDAA bill, because this time Mo Brooks voted for it. The whole Alabama delegation voted for it. They say it was cleaned up in the Senate, and he'll know better than anyone what's in it, if it's a better bill now than it was before. I mean, if anyone knows the latest on that, it's Casey Wardinsky. Then in the 4 o'clock hour, I do have a special guest from the Center for Immigration Studies talking about the continuing border crisis. I mean, that's pretty much going to be the theme of the show today. I've noticed that a lot of the news stories, it's like there are so many crises under the Biden administration that you can't keep up with them all. And you move on to the next one, and you forget that when you've moved on to the next one, the previous one is still happening. The previous crisis is still a thing that's going on, but you've lost focus on that because you've moved on to another one that has started under Biden. And there are so many different issues where this is the case. And I especially noticed that today, so I have to talk about that. And of course, we'll be talking with Copper. You just heard her voice. How are you today, Copper?
Doing pretty well. It's Friday. It makes me happy.
Yes, Friday makes us Friday makes us all happy.
True.
That is very true. So I want to start the show today. Basically, I tweeted out about this, and you can follow me on Twitter at Michael Yaffe. And Phil Williams, who usually hosts this show, liked my tweet on this and responded to my tweet. So I'm like, okay, if he likes it, then I know I can start the show with it, since it's his show. But I posted a story about the crisis in Afghanistan. Remember, the theme today really is that there are so many crises under the Biden administration, and they're still going on, even if it's not getting the attention it was before. One of those is what's going on in Afghanistan today. It is still a crisis, and this one is solely of Biden's making. It really, really is. Well, maybe I say solely, but General Milley didn't help. His defense secretary didn't help. So maybe it's not solely, but pretty much Biden's completely responsible. And the crisis is still going on there. Here's the story. The United Nations, this is according to the Associated Press. The United Nations says Afghanistan's economy is collapsing before our eyes. Not too surprising. Did you really expect the Taliban to be great experts on economics? Did you really expect the Taliban, when they took over, to really push for a free market economy that would spread prosperity in Afghanistan? Did anyone really expect that? No, probably not. And that's understandable. But here's the story. The UN humanitarian chief warned that Afghanistan's economic collapse is happening before our eyes and urged the international community to take action to stop the free fall before it leads to more deaths. Now, Martin Griffiths said in an interview with the Associated Press on Thursday that donor nations need to agree that in addition to emergency humanitarian aid, they need to support basic services for the Afghan people, including education, hospitals, electricity, and paying servants. Now, when you look more into what's going on there, they said 4 million children are out of school right now. 9 million more will be out of school soon, and the reason is simple. 70% of teachers haven't been paid since August. Now, that's just what's going on in the schools, but they're also expecting millions to not be able to get food, adequate food. That they're expecting, as we get more and more into winter, that they're going to have starving people, millions of people starving, kids starving in Afghanistan. It's a huge problem. But there is a lesson here, I think, beyond that Biden is a complete failure. I mean, we all get that. We all know that. If you listen to this show, if you listen to my show in the morning, you totally understand that. But it shows one other thing. And this is what I put out in my tweet earlier that Phil Williams responded to. Let me see if I make sure I can grab it here so I get it exactly right. I said, even if you disagree with the U.S. being there in the first place, talking about Afghanistan, even if you disagree with that, this is still a reminder that our country, the United States, is a force for good and made things better in that country when our troops were there. And Phil Williams liked it. And of course, he's a veteran. He was over there. And he said, I can testify, meaning he saw firsthand what good U.S. troops can do when they're in another country. Now, this is not an argument that we need to send troops back in. I'm not saying that. This is not an argument that we need to go invade Russia or something to prevent them from invading Ukraine. I'm not saying that. That's a whole different discussion, and we can have that discussion another day, what we should do, where we should send troops in the future. But the reason why I point this out and I bring this up is there is sort of a movement, especially in the left, but even some in the right, who believe that the United States, our presence around the world, is bad for the world. That all we do is just create too many problems in the world, too much chaos in the world. If the United States just pulled out of the rest of the world and we were just here, it would be like utopia. All these problems that happen there, it wouldn't happen. A lot of those problems are created by the United States of America. Just ask Bernie Sanders. You ever talk about Latin America or other South American countries with Bernie Sanders, he will always bring up that it's the imperialist United States that caused the problems. Those capitalist imperialists that caused the problems in South America. Now, of course, that's not true. One of the reasons why we had a presence in South and Central America is because the Soviet Union did. And if we didn't, the Soviet Union would have completely taken over those areas. And do you honestly think that there would be great areas, great places to be with the Soviet Union in charge? Of course not. But when you look at Afghanistan, you look at people starving there now. You look at kids out of school now. You look at people being killed there now. You look at the Taliban and what they're up to now, and it's going to be a terrorist haven now. It shows what happens when the United States isn't around. And it shows that when the United States is there, our troop presence there, it's a force for good. You can make an argument we shouldn't have been there because it wasn't really in our own interest. I don't know if I agree with that, but I understand it. That for our own interest, maybe we shouldn't be there. But that does not mean that our presence there was a force for evil or something or created all these problems. Because if we never went in there, the Taliban would have been in charge this whole time. And Iran would be messing in there. There'd be more terrorism in there. And do you honestly think it would have been a great place to live for all the people there? Even though it's crumbling now because we left, the last 20 years when we were there, kids were able to go to school. Women were able to go to work. The economy was able to grow in some areas. Infrastructure worked. People were not starving like they are going to be this year. And that's because the United States of America, for all of our flaws, when we do something like that, we feel like it's our responsibility to also take care of the people over there. That we don't just want to let people starve when we have troops over there. We take care of our troops, but we also take care of the people. So I wanted to bring that up because I think sometimes we bash our military and our military presence sometimes, and we shouldn't. We should remember that America is a force for good in the world. So we'll talk more about this. Also, I got a take on the media once again. And Joseph Curl will join us at the bottom of the hour. This is Yaffe filling in for Phil Williams here on Right Side Radio. We'll be back. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. This is Yaffe filling in for Phil Williams today. Thank him so much for letting me do this, and it's been a lot of fun. Copper is here as well. And by the way, if you want to find out more about me, if you've never heard me on the station before, I know most of you have. You listen to me in the morning. But if you haven't, off the off chance, you can follow me on Twitter at Michael Yaffe. Last name is Yaffee. Or you can like the Yaffe Facebook page. I am on here on WVNN 9 to 11 a.m. Monday through Friday, right after Dale Jackson. So if you want to check out the podcast, it's available anywhere podcasts are available. Oh, by the way, Copper, you have your show tomorrow, right? Or Sunday, right?
Sunday, that's right. Yes. 3 p.m.
So know what you're going to talk about?
We're probably going to talk a little bit more about the after effects of the Supreme Court case. Also, came out that the Texas law is still going to stand despite abortion advocates have been asking over and over and over again for the Supreme Court to block it. So.
Does that kind of surprise you? I mean, you made a good point when we were talking in the break earlier that this isn't the first time they've let it stand.
Yeah.
So maybe by now it's like, okay, for a while they're going to let it stand. But I don't know. I've never been optimistic about that law standing in the long run. But Eventually it's going to be shot down for some reason.
Yeah, same. I think they just wanted to go through the lower courts. Basically, pro-abortion advocates are asking for an exception. They want special treatment. Won't you just skip the process and turn it over now rather than waiting for it to go through all the lower courts like it's supposed to? The Supreme Court was like, no. We're not going to give you special treatment. Stop acting like you're the only thing that matters here.
Yeah, so I haven't had a chance to really talk to you about it as much after the arguments, the oral arguments in front of the Supreme Court when it comes to the Dobbs case out of Mississippi that might overturn Roe v. Wade. When I watch the mainstream media and I watch a lot of Democrats, they're kind of acting like Roe v. Wade's already been overturned. For some reason, they're very, very pessimistic about it. And I'm kind of pessimistic for the opposite reason, that I don't know if I trust the court to actually go that far. But what do you think?
That would be depressing, wouldn't it? If our opponents believed in our stand more than our justices ended up doing.
That's true.
That would be depressing. But I mean, I think there's been so much momentum that's grown in the past few decades. A couple studies came out recently that showed that more pro-life laws have been passed in the past few years and decade than pretty much in all of the rest of the time since Roe combined. So they're just getting the sense that lawmakers around the country aren't viewing Roe as this untouchable roadblock anymore, that we're done with this. And we're going to keep passing these laws at the state level over and over and over again until something happens. And so I think they just at this point think they've gotten to the top again and there's enough support backing them that they're just going to make the decision.
And what do you think is driving a lot of that? Because I think you're right. Obviously, the pro-life side, they've had some major victories in the past couple of decades. Why is that? Is it just that our argument is just better and it's just more convincing?
Yeah, I mean, I think the internet has helped a lot with spreading information. The media can't completely control what people learn about prenatal development, about these abortion pills, about testimonies from people who've kept their children and haven't regretted it. So there's just a lot more testimony out there about the child being alive and about the good things that come from keeping your child. And there's been time for groups like secular pro-life groups, Democrat pro-life groups, to also form and say, no, this isn't just a religious issue. This is wrong. And we need to do something differently.
Yeah. You know, in one sense, you know, obviously to you and me, it is partly a religious issue because we believe in God and we believe, okay, that is a baby being created in the womb by God. And the Bible talks about it. But I think in terms of an effective argument for the entire country, for the movement, we couldn't just have that.
Yeah.
Just having that argument alone wasn't going to be enough. But you look at the science now, you look at the facts now, you look at all the stages of development and what happens in the womb on these stages of development, you're right. It's kind of over. The evidence is overwhelming. Maybe that's part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's also a lot more options out there for women and parents who are facing unexpected pregnancies.
Not according to the left. Right. Yes, then they're like, oh, pro-lifers don't care about life after they're born. That's what they always say.
A total lie. And people know it because they hear stories about single mothers who go in and get free baby clothes and diapers from the pro-lifers.
I know. And they'll, you know, and then they'll try to shut down a lot of those pregnancy centers while then saying, oh, they're not trying to help those mothers. It's like, okay, sure. So we'll talk more about that later on in the show. Copper will weigh in on that. Coming up next, Joseph Curl, columnist for The Daily Wire, also editor-in-chief of offthepress.com, joins me to talk the latest news. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Right Side Radio. This is Yaffe filling in for Phil Williams. Back in a second.